All right, guys, you know that this episode of the podcast is brought to you by Hepias. Hepias is your number one place to go for premium CBD products at a fraction of the cost. This is perfect for any first-time user and for the veteran user. There's no THC. It's locally sourced and third-party tested, so you don't have to worry about paying for any fancy celebrities or a drug test. These guys have something for everybody, and I personally enjoy their products. In fact, my favorite one's the Sleep Aid. So go check them out, HepiusMed.com, HepiusMed.com. Right in time for the holiday seasons. Again, go check them out, HepiusMed.com, and have fun. All right, guys, it's time for me to introduce my next guest. But before I do, huge shout out to everybody who's joined me on Facebook, who's followed me on Instagram. And if you haven't yet, please do the Thinking Project Facebook group on Facebook, at Dalton K. Jensen on Instagram. And if you're listening to this on Apple, which my analytics say a majority of you guys are, please subscribe, leave a written review. Those help me out a ton. Also, big shout out to everybody who's had me on their podcast this year. Top Shelfers, The Other Side of the Beehive, Dre Rocca, 27th Hour. The 27th Hour podcast should actually come out today. So tune into that after you're done listening to Elizabeth Becker, who is my next guest. She's a Canadian business owner. She's the owner of High B&B, where they take a different approach to connecting people together through culture. And you guys really won't want to miss this one. This one was a lot of fun and has a lot of good info. So without further ado, Elizabeth Becker. Welcome, everybody. This is Dalton Jensen, and you're tuning into The Thinking Project. Okay, right on. Well, we're rolling. Thank you so much for joining me, Elizabeth.
Oh, thank you for having me.
You're welcome. I appreciate it. So tell us, so you own High B&B.
Yeah.
High B&B, and that's with the cannabis industry there in Canada, right?
Yeah.
So how did you come up with that idea? Like, when did it start and how did it get going?
Oh, let's see. It's been a few years, over 2 years now that I've been on it. Where did it come from and how did it get going? Well, it came, I guess, out of a number of things. I have spent quite a few decades in the film and television industry as a writer and director. So I wasn't completely satisfied with how that industry had not opened up to me. You know, I work very hard and I'm very ambitious and I have a cat and a child here because it's COVID, right? So
yeah, that's right. You're good. No worries.
Yeah, thank you. So basically, I knew I wanted to make a transition and I wasn't exactly sure where to go and how to make that transition. I knew that cannabis was going to be legalized. They had announced it, but they hadn't come through with it. Was looking for an in there because it's something else. Oh my gosh.
All good.
You see that? I'm sorry.
All good. No worries.
Okay. Okay.
I know animals have a mind of their own. They're crazy.
Hunting season around here, if we don't monitor it properly.
There you go.
So I knew I was looking for something else, but I didn't know exactly what that would be. I wanted to be open to it. So, sorry about that.
Oh, you're totally fine. No
worries. I'm talking to my daughter. I think that's a little bit better too.
Yeah.
My apologies.
Oh, no, you're fine. You're fine. I know. Well, this pandemic I'm sure at some point my son will walk in here or my daughter will walk in here as well. So I got a little 3-year-old and a little 5-year-old.
They're opening the schools up again here, and I'm in Toronto, and they're opening them up in another 2 weeks. So 2 more weeks of
there you go.
This second wave.
Right on, okay, on.
So let's see. It's a little bit of a long story, so I'll try and just. I was open to it, but not sure exactly where to go. You know, somebody gave me great advice, which is follow your passion if you're looking for a career shift.
Yeah.
You know, and So I was open to cannabis and I ended up working for somebody, a payment processor. And I saw a lot of opportunity in turning over the vendors in the cannabis space who are working out of the gray market and, you know, knowing that legalization was coming. So I made a lot of relationships with the cannabis dispensaries. And that didn't really amount to very much, but through there, I made a partner in the payment processing industry and partnered with him. He was an entrepreneur and I learned a lot about entrepreneurship through him. He was very successful in insurance in another industry and wanted to take that over into cannabis. And so he wanted to use my relationships with all of those dispensaries. Unfortunately, that also didn't go anywhere because ultimately his relationships on the insurance side and on the banking side couldn't move forward because of the federal regulations. They didn't feel comfortable moving forward with that. And so then I was lucky enough to start working for another entrepreneur. This one was a specific cannabis entrepreneur in cannabis tourism space. And I also learned a lot from him. So working with him in the cannabis tourism space, I saw the excitement of all the cannabis enthusiasts. Like they're so passionate and so excited about the legalization and wanting to have normalization around cannabis right now. That it's legal. They want to be able to interact with it in a way that's, you know, the same way that you interact with alcohol. And they, you know, we have been toying around with the idea of like an Airbnb for cannabis users, and everybody was so passionate about, but the person I was working with just didn't want to go down the path of doing what he needed to do to open up a site. So I took it on my own and ran with it. And I worked for like 2 years to build the site. And so he was smart enough to see, oh no, this barrier to entry is very costly, very time to, and I was crazy enough to say, no, I believe in this. I mean, so I took it off of my own. I started working through the numbers. I started talking to people about it and seeing how they were just so passionate about it. And so I'd love that. I love that. Please, will you do that? You know, and I just felt, it was almost like not a choice because I felt that passionate about doing it. I was just doing it for fun. I didn't care if I made any money out of it. I just got out of bed every day and I felt like a kid. I couldn't wait to get to work.
That's awesome.
To build this out and what it would take to put it together. And I'm still doing that every day, like waking up and it's the load's getting a little heavy though.
Well, I mean, because you're in Canada where cannabis is legal, like that would make sense that you would start to make like normalizing it a little more, you know, easier, right? Do you still have a lot of stigma around cannabis that you're still fighting? Because how long has it been legal in Canada?
Oh, it's since October 2018.
Okay. That's, I was going to say it's been a while. Yeah. It's been a while.
2.5 years.
Yeah.
But I have to say that, you know, it got legalized here, but there were a lot of regulations. Like the government said they wanted to legalize it, but then how do you regulate it? And so they were pressured to try to, you know, create something very quickly. And so there were so many regulations around it, a lot of it around branding to protect the kids.
Yeah.
So it that can't, makes sense, you know, you can't use certain logos and you can't advertise anywhere where it's not age gated.
So interesting.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, because like we were talking about before we got hopped on this live, like CBD in America is the same way. So like we can't advertise. It's really hard to advertise on social media, really hard to advertise, like in stores and stuff like that. And like the CBD products, like aren't like, they don't have big signs or anything. They're kind of like hidden, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Exactly. So yeah, it's kind of weird. Yeah. I hear what you're saying on that.
So when it became legal, everybody was just, oh, we can't do this and we can't do this and we can't do this, you know, and you probably know that the cannabis industry, you know, there was all this, you know, build up and excitement and then it just sort of,
and then there was like this big bottleneck, like, there was like, what are we supposed to do?
There weren't enough retailers to purchase it. So I found that so many people were so focused on what we can't do. And I just decided not to look at that and say, you know what, we're legal here in Canada and this is what it should look like. And I, you know, tried to find the holes in the legislation where we could commercialize it. you know, Hybnb is not buying or selling any cannabis. So we're not cannabis touching. We don't have a license. So we're a little bit different than the LPs, you know, because we don't have to live in fear of losing our license.
Yeah, that's true. Huh? That would be scary. So the restrictions are still pretty tight, even in Canada.
Yeah. After the third year, the government is going to loosen them up a little bit. So there's a lot of lobbying around what those, you know, where exactly it should be opened up.
Yeah. Yeah. And I would imagine that legalizing cannabis has some, I mean, I don't know about Canada though, but like in America, one of the big things with like legalizing cannabis would be like, well, what do you do with all the people who were arrested for cannabis and have been in jail for quite a while? Cause that's a big one, right? Like, there's enough people in prison for just like possession or use, like for nonviolent crimes, right? That it's kind of like, well, what do we do? You know what I mean? Like, let them out, obviously. You know, do you expose your records? Do you pay them for their time? And you know what I mean? It's just kind of weird, right? It's just all really strange. but your business is bringing people together like that in that culture.
Yeah. Well, because I just saw a certain common sense. Right now that it's legal, it means that we shouldn't have to walk around in being judged or in shame or trying to find a hiding spot where people can smoke cannabis.
Good point. Yeah.
Stigma. Like the stigma still remains, right? It's inbred in there where, you know, so many people grew up with the idea of this stereotypical stoner.
Yeah. Or like that 70s show or something like that, right?
Right. I mean, that's a stereotypical stoner. Well, we're trying to break that because there's so many people who use it for health and wellness, and as a tool, as a creative tool, as a healing tool,
yes, you
know, medicine, and people who want to explore who've never tried it before without the stigma. So knowing that it's totally legal, it means that they and we should be able to travel and enjoy it when we travel without like people who are looking for accommodations, and it can, 420 friendly accommodations, and they go on to Airbnb, and the Airbnb doesn't really say cannabis because they'll lose their banking position, their global banking position. So they can't really acknowledge cannabis, but there are a few hosts that, you know, slip in 420 friendly, or people who are looking for a place where they can smoke have to just find smoke, you know, where smoking is permitted, but they take the chance that they'll get kicked out because that host is not 420 friendly. So it really is a, you know, an issue. A lot of people are needing this service for accommodation rentals that doesn't exist. So being in Canada, it's something that we can do that outward, open, totally legal. We can talk about it. We have filters on our site where you can select, you know, if the smoking is available inside the unit or on a balcony or a veranda or in front. So hosts can choose what, you know, how they want
people to like interact and what they and where they go. Yeah.
Yeah. But the other thing that we can do, and this is sort of, you know, a little bit of a loophole that I found, is that, you know, businesses aren't able to sell. Nobody's able to sell cannabis without a license here in Canada.
Okay.
But we can give it away. Like if you come into my home and you're here with me and I can share my personal property cannabis with you. So,
oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah, so that means that for our hosts on Hybnb, they are welcome to share their personal property cannabis with their guests. So if you're coming to Canada and you're looking for a place, you could have the cannabis here waiting for you, like on your bed or in a little welcome pack when you check in.
That is a really good idea. That's really cool.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Cause I think that's way cool. So like, but you said you weren't always, you said you started out in like the, or at least you came from the payment processing part of things.
Yeah.
Oh dude. Well, payment processing is a nightmare in anything cannabis.
Payment processing in cannabis, right?
Yeah. Or like, especially here, like, so I own a CBD company and it's a nightmare to find CBD. Like we're not, and we don't, like, we can't even have THC. Like it's like 0.3% or lower.
Yeah.
So like it's got nothing in it. basically. And what's funny is like, is we still can't get it. You know, it's very hard. And then if you get it and they decide that they don't like it or something like that, they get kind of cold feet. They can just back out for no reason and not tell you.
Yeah. I'm lucky that I have the background in the payment processing industry that I know the situation. I mean, there's different solutions where people are trying to create a Band-Aid opportunity, but so that's the value that I have being in Canada is that
we that's true. Payment
processing here. So our company is across Canada. So we're operating across Canada. We just became like public facing with our site. So we don't have a lot of listings today, but that's going to change soon. Sure. And we're looking at coming into the US probably later in 2021.
That's
and
insane. Just
talking to our payment processor here to make sure that they will, and I think that they will be able to cover us into the states where it's legal.
Where cannabis is like fully. Yeah. And you got some right close to Canada that are good, you know, Oregon, is, I think Washington is, you know, it's so funny. I'm in Salt Lake. I think Utah right now is like the only West Coast state that's not like, we're legal for medical reasons. So we have medical cannabis, but like, as far as like recreational, you know what I mean? Like, I think we're the only West Coast that's not like fully recreational.
Right. I wish we could be in the states where it's legal for medicinal use as well.
Oh, there you go. I'm looking forward.
The payment processor will let me, because if people are using it, if they have a prescription, for medical, they are going to need a place to stay as well that's cannabis friendly. So I don't see why we can't be open in those states. And that's where we're working towards. But the accommodations is only one side of our business.
Okay. Yes. That's what I was getting to next was like, so what else is going on?
Yeah. It's sort of like one third of our business. So we're sort of focused on accommodations is what, let me back it up because this is sort of fun. So when you come to our website, you have the option to play high, stay high, or get high.
That's awesome.
that's what you do. So stay high is the accommodation side.
Yeah. Yeah.
Play high is adventures. That's what we call them. They're events, activities, workshops, classes, or
meetups. Oh, cool. Okay. Great.
So that's the other side of the vision. Not only can we, you know, want to travel and be in cannabis friendly accommodations, but we want to be able to alcohol is so integrated into our lives. And I think that now that cannabis is legal, we should be able to utilize cannabis in the same way by interacting with other people in social realms. And so I think there's a need for that. Yeah.
So
that's what I was trying to solve with this. And sometimes you can't have cannabis smoking in public places, like smoking is not permitted, but there's lots of other ways to ingest cannabis. And those are really rising, you know, edibles and vaping and beverages. I'm actually crazy about beverages these days.
Yeah. I think one of the things that's kind of booming here are like the gummies, right? For people who use them, they're great for that. I know somebody who just has a bag and they just sleep with it, right? Like they use it for sleep.
Yeah.
So they'll just have it by the bed and they'll just take one or whatever. And then they'll go to sleep. And I'm like, what's so crazy? You know what I mean? So when you brought up like that, the comparison to like the alcohol industry, I'm like, I mean, we can regulate that. We can do stuff with that where we're not like advertising to kids and things like that. So we should be able, this should be pretty smooth. I don't know. In my opinion, it feels like it should be a smooth transition if you wanted to legalize it like that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I think the Americans will probably do it better than us. Like Canadians aren't great at business.
Well, there was a lot of problems when the prohibition ended and alcohol, you know, was becoming legal, a lot of similar things. I guess we'll see what happens. Cause it's kind of like, I think they pushed it kind of to the back burner, really, this whole thing. And for whatever reason, I have no idea, but it is what it is. So you've been doing this for 2 years. Is this something that you said you were passionate about it, but is this something that you've always like, have you always had this dream to be like an entrepreneur or a business owner or in this realm?
I have actually. I
That's
grew up,
cool.
My mother was an entrepreneur and I grew up in a family business.
What was the family business?
Becker Marketing and Sales. Limited.
Hey, there you go.
Yeah,
that's great.
She had a big company though. She had, I think, 30 employees, and at its height, it was running $60 million of sales through it annually. Wow. So she was a big boss. I grew up and my mother was such a great boss to all these people, and she took me under her wing and I learned by her. All the way through. And so when I got to be a little bit older, I felt like I wanted to find my own accomplishment. I didn't want to just go into her business, because what she taught me was there's no better feeling in life than the feeling of accomplishment. You know,
wow.
She loved it so much. And so she saw, I have two sisters, but she saw with me that, I had something maybe a little bit different, and she wanted to give me life experience. So she sent me to the fruit pie plant to work one summer, where I worked on the assembly line, just so that I could, you know, see a different point of view of how people worked, you know, on the assembly line making pies. I had to put like the butter and the cinnamon sugar over the apples before it goes to the next person who puts the top of the pie.
That's fantastic. Yes, that's fantastic. An assembly line for pies. That's great.
Yeah. So I developed this thirst of life experience, wanting to accomplish something. And so when I, you know, left the house as a young adult or, you know, teenager, I sort of set off to find my own accomplishment. And I set off to do that as a director in film. And so I had like a 20, maybe 25 year effort to be the next Steven Spielberg, right? I was very ambitious. I've always had, you know, I've always known that, you know, I was going to have something in my life that was going to come together and click. And I've always felt this innate drive to connect with people. So I did it through film. I wanted to have a voice. I wanted to have a message. I wanted to connect with them and change their lives in some way, through the story and through the directing. And it just, you know, I had experiences of bad luck in the film industry. It just didn't click. And I couldn't understand it, because I've always had this sense, like I knew it. I could feel that there was something there for me, but I didn't know what it was. So I was living every day with this frustration that I can't understand why this isn't clicking for me. I can't understand it. And it was so, so hard to leave it, to give up and say, okay, does this mean I failed? Does this mean my whole life, you know, that sensation has been incorrect that I've been feeling, and this drive has been leading me nowhere, right? Like, so those were some hard decisions and hard things to consider and to get past, you know, and how would I know that this would have come together the way it did in terms of the timing of the legalization? Mm. And I feel in a way that it's guided you know, a little bit, that it's come together. It's like sometimes in my film industry, there's obstacle after obstacle after obstacle, and things that you have no control over. And with this business, with Hybnb, it's been the opposite. It's been open door after open door. One of the best things that happened is that I brought in a partner. So I don't own it entirely on my own. I've brought in a partner, and he's in the finance industry, in the corporate finance industry. So he really
That's helpful.
Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah.
That's helpful. That works. Well, so that's what similar to what our story is. You know, I started this with a couple of partners, and I'm just the money guy. But I was also very passionate about one of the branding things that we do for our CBD company is we just try to our logo is very like clean and modern, because we just, you know, it's like you just want to create new customers and get people to realize that, like, hey, this is a lot more than, you know, like we were talking about earlier, like Bill and Ted or that 70s show or like Scooby-Doo or something like that. I might get in trouble for saying that last one, but
Scooby-Doo, what's wrong with that?
Oh, it's Shaggy. I always felt like Shaggy was high. He was hungry all the time. I don't know.
Right? What are they doing in that band?
Yeah. That's my theory. but it's true. Like getting it normalized and helping people realize that it's not just like this this other way that the media has done such a good job at portraying. You know what I mean? Like there's good. I always tell people, you'd be surprised if you really like started talking to people and started opening people up and being one of those people that people could talk to really easily. You'd be surprised how many people are in that industry that you don't even that use it, that you wouldn't, you had no clue. You have no idea.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so like bringing people together to just another way of networking and finding people on common ground, like that's such an important opportunity that I think a lot of industries miss, right? Just finding ways to connect people and just to meet people. Cause like I would love that because like I have met people who I would have never thought like, oh, you're a like cannabis advocate, like an user or something like that. They're like, oh yeah, man. All day. I just don't talk about it. And I'm like, that's sad. Cause like we would have never met otherwise. You know what I mean? So I think what you're doing is great.
Thank you.
I think what you're doing is great. And I like what you said about, you know, about your, like the way you described, accomplishments and achievement is how I would describe, like, that would be my definition of success, right? Is not necessarily like making a lot of money or having a big exit plan or something like that, but it would be these small wins and like this growth every day. Do you feel like that would be the same for you?
Yeah, I think loving what you do and having other people appreciating the things that you're doing so that there's some purpose towards it, you know, and that you can make a living out of it. I think that's success.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's fantastic. So how, what other plans do you have for HiBnB?
Well, we're still building the site, you know, just finished building out the messaging on it and the ratings and reviews, because it's not an easy feat to build a site when people have expectations that are similar to Airbnb.
Yeah,
we have a huge team, right? And we're pre-revenue at this point, and it's really just myself and my partner, although my partner's working on other things too. So that it's all on me. And I had to learn how to build a site. I had to very, very quickly learn to communicate with the team in India and, you know, our leads here. And so the tech side has been a big learning curve for me. And so we're continuing to build on that. One of the things that we have just found is a company who can guarantee over $1 million of insurance to our hosts for every single booking. So that's going to help us onboard the host. That's a huge win that we can offer insurance to our hosts. And you know, the other thing that I've been learning about the short-term rental market is these channel managers, so that right now our site is set up so that each individual host has to enter a listing for each apartment or, you know, each rental. But the industry is set up so that you have these property managers who have 500 properties that they manage, and they don't have the time of day to sit and make one listing for each one of those properties, right? So we have to adjust and adapt our software to be open to this automated channel of, you know, bringing in property managers. So that's the, you know, that was like, oh my gosh, that's a big one.
Well, I think that's interesting. I think that's a lot. So let me ask you, like, on the business side of things, because you just mentioned one of them, like learning how to do all this yourself, right? Like websites and communicating with people. How did you approach those challenges when they came up? Because I always tell people, like, if you want to be an entrepreneur, don't do any homework. Because if you knew exactly what it was, like, you probably wouldn't do it. You know, you just get over. It's very overwhelming if on the surface.
Very good advice.
That's what we did. We were just like, love this idea, run with it. And then we handled the problems as it came. But how do you progress through those issues that arise?
Yeah, I did it in a very similar way. You know, the first one was jumping off. It was a big learning curve for me at the beginning. It's like, okay, I need a site. How am I going to get a site? And then to research all of the different options and try to figure out which was the best. And, you know, the first thing is that people said, oh, well, you're going to need $300,000 to do this.
Oh,
and I didn't have $300,000 to start.
No, that's a barrier to entry, right? No one's got $300,000 to start, for sure.
But, you know, I had to just jump off the cliff and say, I don't know where this is going to lead me, but I know, you know, I have confidence in myself that I'm going to learn to swim. And I just picked up everything, and I'm still doing it every day, learning what I need to learn in order to make this work, because I can't pay somebody else to do it. I can't count on anybody else to do it. It's starting now that I can start to pay, because we've closed our pre-seed funding round, raised $500,000, which is great. So we're
holy cow.
Yeah.
You're the HiBnB.
Yeah.
Wow. Holy cow. How was it that journey for you going through funding, going through getting that?
Well, my partner Kelly led it, you know, so he's a CFO on another cannabis company called Slang Cannabis.
Worldwide.
So he really knows his side on the finance. You know, I had been there before in all my various creative ventures, putting together a business plan and going out and trying to raise funds. But he really grounded it. In the end, he brought in some personal relationships. So we worked very hard on our model. I worked for a year on the investor deck, a year. It's like, here I am trying to run the company. But then that's another area where I had to have this learning curve. It's like, gosh, I got to figure out all these metrics. And I've got to do that like through the day and then through the night, do something else. Like I've basically been working 3 or 4 jobs all in one day.
Wow. Oh my goodness.
And then pitching all the time it takes to pitch.
Yeah.
Let alone running
to pitch
company.
To pitch investors is a big deal. I mean, and it's not a joke. Yeah. And that's not easy. That's not an easy feat, especially when you're going and asking for, you know, you have a new company, the prototypes or the model might be not all the way scaled, but it's got enough. You got enough of an idea. And then to go ask somebody for $250,000, $500,000, whatever you're asking for.
I had to go out and learn. The best advice somebody gave me was to read this book.
Okay. Venture Deals.
Yeah. It'll tell you everything that you need to know about corporate finance and raising funds.
Wow. All right. That's it. That's on my reading list. I didn't even know that book existed.
Yeah.
Venture Deals.
Go to book. I mean, it's a dry read.
I'm sure. Well, hey, listen, I got my bachelor's degree in accounting and I know exactly what you mean. Yeah. Like that was a nightmare. Well, reading all of it. Cause you're just reading like law and like, there might be some ways to pitch in there, I assume. Right.
Yeah.
But it's all just,
well, I've been used to pitching because I did that with my own career, right?
Yeah,
coming up with ideas and going to networks and pitching them on it. So it's not something that I didn't have the experience in, but you know, making sure that the numbers made sense and crunched that was a big learning curve for me. And learning the technology, it was a big learning curve, how to communicate about it and the way in which it grows and it gets built. So that was a huge one too. And now the thing that I'm learning that I'm jumping off into is marketing and social media marketing. So these are all like arms of the business that are really, really important that I can't rely on anybody. I can ask advice for, but ultimately it comes down to me knowing my stuff.
Man. Well, and that's, I think I had a conversation with a guy earlier, like when I did in the first couple podcasts, but it was interesting how he explained, he's like, learn how to do it all yourself. And do you feel like that's been beneficial for you?
Learning how to do it all myself?
Yeah.
It's been hard, right?
It's been hard.
Pulled my hair out. Like, I feel so badly. At some point, I think I was yelling at somebody. I called up the social media manager. I'm like, can you help us? And she's like, you just have to do it yourself. I said, are you kidding?
Oh, no.
And you're telling me I have to do it myself. I've just learned how to build a whole website. Don't tell me I have to learn how to do this now. I just learned how to raise funding. And now you're telling me that I've got to learn how to do all the social media management on my own. That's why I'm calling you.
Yeah. How did that? Well, that's so interesting. Why did she tell you had to do it by yourself?
Well, I think ultimately I think you're right. First early stage, if you're just like, I don't know how to do this, I need somebody else to do it for me, you'll never know the fundamentals of what it takes. And you'll never be in touch with the social media. Cause I, you know, I'm a little bit older. I'm not a digital native. Right. So there was a little bit of a gap there for me and some hesitancy, but if I didn't know it, then I wouldn't be able to own it. So I'm glad that she did that. Although it was frustrating. It's frustrating.
I like what you said there. If you don't know it, you can't own it.
Yeah.
I'm gonna steal that from you. I'm gonna give you credit, obviously, but I'm gonna steal that from you because I'm like, that's fantastic. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's great. Holy cow.
It's hard. This business is not an easy business because it's so diverse. Like it's accommodations and it's events and it's advertising and it's technology and there's so many focuses, like, you know, so many points to focus on. It's hard to do one thing really well when you're doing so many things. Like that's one thing that I'm aware of. We've got together our board of advisors and, you know, I'm doing my best to make sure that I'm getting feedback from industry and have advisors and people to guide me on all different areas. And so it's one thing I want to make sure we don't make the mistake of, which is not doing one thing great because we're trying to do everything.
Yeah. Well, that's a really good point. Really good point to bring up. So, I mean, how has it been for you, like, in an industry that's so new, like, and working through all the regulations? You know, we've been talking about that, but how has that been for you? Just, you know, it's just learning everything, like especially on the regulation side of it, and being in an industry that's so new.
Well, I'm inspired and invigorated by the newness because it means there's no rules and there's nothing there, because I don't like rules. Like, you can probably tell that by this. I don't like anybody telling me what I can and can't do. So I love the white canvas here. But, you know, there's lots of people who are like, oh, well, you can't do that, or good luck to you, right? Because nobody that's come before you that's already done it.
Yeah.
But in general, it didn't take too long before a few industry insiders sort of reached out and opened to me, and I hung on to them, and they've been introducing me to other people. So it was a bit hard at first banging on the door of the cannabis industry without being on the inside in terms of the producers. So a lot of it, you just have to say, okay, well, I'm just going to set it up to be like this. This is how I think it should be, and adapt.
Yeah.
And because it is a changing industry. It's a brand new industry here in Canada. And then we all got hit by COVID. So the cannabis industry has not found its feet since it was legal here, right? It opened up, and then none of the producers are making any money because they weren't selling enough. And the legacy market is still strong and challenging the legal market. And so nobody's found their feet here yet.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and then 2020 hit everybody, and that just threw every industry for a loop.
Yeah.
Like, if you weren't selling COVID tests, you were, you know what I mean? It was hard. It was hard for everybody.
Yeah. COVID in the end helped us out, I think.
Okay.
Because everything just slowed down. And, you know, my first, you know how I said it, that I had to jump off about the building the site, right? I had to just and jump off, because that didn't go so well. I thought that I was going to get a certain product. Like, I just expected that I would have, you know, the quality of product that you see out there.
And
you know, what came back to me at first was like, no, like,
no way. You're like, no way
at all. Like, are you kidding? You thought that I meant that? And so I learned very quickly that you cannot expect that other people know exactly what you're expecting. You have to just totally spell it out. And it's interesting because when you're working with some people in business, they're like, I know that, you don't have to say that to me, but sometimes you do. And so that's been my learning curve too, right? Sometimes I can't take the chance that I might hurt your feelings if I don't tell you what I'm going to do, because it's going to be longer for me if you go and do something and come back and it's not right. And then we have to redo it, and I'm paying you double the amount of time, and it's taking all my extra time too. It's easier for me to say, it's like sort of micromanage, you know? And so I've become a bit of a micromanager, but it's the only way for me to move forward at the best, you know, what's best for the company at this point.
Yeah. And I think you have a really good point there. I mean, just setting really clear expectations, up front and never assuming. I think that's one thing I've had to learn in business too. Like, similar, I think that's one thing that everybody has to learn is, you know, if you want something done, you have to be like very, very clear, you know, 'cause then the waters get muddy and then people get mad. You know, and just from a miscommunication, just from, like, you know, not being able to just tell people. And I mean, you know, because I feel like you don't necessarily have this, right? But some people that I talk to, you know, they're like, well, yeah, like what you said, I don't want to hurt someone's feelings, or like, let's just see what happens, or they already know. And I'm like, dude, I wouldn't trust it. Just tell them, like, find a way to learn how to talk to somebody, you know, and tell them what you need without making them mad. I guess that's what you need to learn first.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, for the design of the site, like, I would just hand draw some designs.
Oh, wow.
And take pictures of it and send it off and say, this is what I want.
Cool. And trust. Sometimes you got to do that. Right? Sometimes you got to do that. That's insane. Well, so tell everybody how they can find you, especially if they end up in Canada. I have some people who listen in Canada, weirdly enough. Right. I don't think a lot, but if they're in Canada, but if they ever go to Canada, tell them how they get a hold of you.
Yeah, or go. You can come and check out the site. It's HiBnB, H-I-B-N-B .ca.
Oh, great. Okay. So
it's a Canadian URL, but when we come down to the States, it's going to be probably .us.
Oh, okay. Great. Yeah. Well, there you go. That's it. Yep. People should check it out. And I appreciate your time and joining me. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Dalton.
Really. Absolutely.
Opportunity.
Yes. Take it easy.